Thank you, Matt. We're going to open up to questions. We have about half an hour for questions. And if you have any questions, I often appreciate the use of implication. And that's one of the things that Matt's taught this afternoon, that implication, when Jesus teaches by implication, he teaches authoritative. So, any questions? Any of the men like to ask? Nathan, that.
Thanks, Brother Matt. That was really good. One that comes to mind that I use in conversations with people regarding the synoptics is in Matthew 21, where Jesus is marching into Jerusalem and the people are crying out and they're saying, "Hosanna to the Son of David." And speaking of the religious leaders, it said they were indignant when they heard this, and they said to him, "Do you hear what these are saying?" To which Jesus replies, "Yes, have you never read," and he quotes from Psalm 8 and verse 2, "out of the mouth of babes and nursing infants you have perfected praise." They're complaining that he is claiming to be the Messiah, and Jesus says, "I have another one for you. I'm God."
Yeah. There's a lot of passages like that throughout all four Gospels, of course. I know I could have used many other passages that I didn't. It's almost a silly question, really. But it's happening, and it's influencing people we're talking to, which is why we're talking about it today. But when you know the Gospels, these are silly questions.
One of your opening questions was, "Do you trust the documents?" And I appreciate that. My question would be, weren't some of the epistles written before, written down before the Gospels were written down? And so Philippians, for example, wouldn't that in the timeline be put on paper before the Synoptic Gospels? So it should have been a non-issue, since Philippians already said that he was pre-incarnate, right?
That's an excellent point. Because the chronology of the doctrine, the idea is that the doctrine of Christ kind of slowly develops, the doctrine about Jesus slowly develops over that period of time, and it sort of gradually becomes more and more grand. Mm-hmm. That's the assumption. But then what you just said is really important. If those epistles were written before the Gospels, which it's likely that some of them are anyway, then that's ridiculous, because that doctrine was accepted in the church before the Synoptic Gospels were even written down. Okay, so that's a good point, Jonathan.
A follow-up from Matthew chapter 14. I'd like to know your thoughts when Jesus was walking on the water. I heard an apologist use this as his main answer to the question, "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid." In Greek, "it is I" is the exact same as in John 8, "I am."
Uh-huh.
And so he's telling his disciples, "I am." Is there any way we could use that, or are we stretching it too far?
I don't have my notes on that, Jonathan, but that's a great point. There are several places in the Synoptic Gospels where you see "I am." And that's not just in John either. And that would imply it as well, for sure. I didn't run across that particular reference in this study, but that's true.
My question has to do with the relationship between John and the Synoptic Gospels, based on the points that you've brought out. There was a book by a late Restoration Movement guy named John Cowden, and the book is called St. John's Christ. And I see it all over the place. It's probably the easiest book to get a hold of that survives from that old movement. I'm not sure if it's valuable at all. I've tried to read it. It's not a particularly riveting book. But in the introduction, he makes a claim about the purpose of John's gospel not being synoptic. Well, why is it even in there? And he argues that the synoptic gospels provided an adequate witness to the reality of the facts concerning Jesus. And then John wrote his gospel to interpret the data about Jesus that had been established by the synoptics. Now, I'm not sure if that's right or wrong. Maybe so, maybe not. But I wondered if you could comment on why John's gospel, being different from the synoptics in its nature or its structure, not in its Christology, but why did John write his gospel and why did he write it differently from the synoptics?
Right. So Donald Guthrie, I'm not familiar with that book you referenced there, Clint, but that his the question you're raising there is a common one. Donald Guthrie says there's four options for how the Gospel of John relates to the synoptics. It's either supplementary, independent of, interpretive of, or a substitute for. And so the idea that it is independent of is impossible to accept for a lot of reasons. When you read the Gospel of John, to say it's independent of means he didn't know about them. Well, how could we believe that? When you read, for example, in John chapter 1, he introduces Andrew as Simon Peter's brother. He's never mentioned a thing about Simon Peter before. How do you know who Simon Peter is? In John 6, he talks about Judas Iscariot as the one that betrayed him, being one of the 12. Well, you don't know anything about the betrayal just from reading John yet. And he also hasn't said a thing about the 12 and lots of other examples. So he just assumes, as you read the Gospel of John, that you have read the synoptics. Another neat one is in John 11, he introduces the family of Lazarus, Martha, and Mary. Mary's the one that anointed Jesus. He says that in John 11. Well, that story doesn't happen until John 12. In the Gospel of John. So how did you know that story? You've already read it. So he assumes a knowledge of the stories that are told in the Synoptic Gospels. So it couldn't be independent of them. The idea that it's interpretive, typically when I see that phrase used, what that means is it's not a good thing. That it's interpretive of it is indicating something of the school of John, of the Johannine school, and how they constructed the book of John, and they took John's teachings and interpreted them that way, and interpreted the synoptic. And so it's all built around the concept of uninspired people putting the book together. So I don't know if that's what this individual means, but when I run across the phrase, that's what I see a lot of the time. The fourth thing that Guthrie mentions is it's a substitute for, so we don't even really have to worry about that, that there's some kind of, like John's trying to overthrow the synoptic gospels with his writing. So the first view is it's supplementary to them. We would say harmonious. And what does John do? I think in order to really understand this question, a little bit about the chronology is helpful. You know, the synoptic gospels are written before the destruction of Jerusalem. Since they have been completed, several things have happened. Number one, the Roman Empire is growing like crazy. In fact, the Roman Empire is becoming what a lot of people thought the Messianic Kingdom would be. What does that mean? How does Jesus relate to all of that? The second thing is that the Jewish state has been destroyed. What was all that about? And how does that relate to Jesus? How does that relate to the story that the synoptics tell? And then the third thing is the beginning of these false doctrines that are attempting to answer it. The seeds of Gnosticism are planted in the 80s and 90s, before the end of the first century. They're beginning to have these philosophical arguments about the true nature of Jesus and whether he's really flesh and all of that sort of a thing. And those false doctrines are supposedly an answer to these questions that have been raised. And so God calls on John and says, John, I want you to answer these questions. And it's those particular questions that John is answering. And he's taking the facts that we know about Jesus and all the other facts that he introduces as well, the story of the life of Jesus, and answers those questions. And that perfects then the story of the gospel. So,
I think that's an excellent answer. I think that John Cowden wouldn't be as liberal as those who say there's a Johannine school that later makes that sort of an interpretation of Christianity. But I think that what I found inadequate about his proposal was that he essentially said the facts concerning Jesus, which are necessary to create faith in the hearts of men, are adequately communicated in the first three Gospels, and John's not concerned with that. He has more of a mystical approach of letting us know the esoteric other meaning of those facts. But John gives a purpose statement.
Yes, he does.
And his purpose statement is not to interpret the synoptics, but so that we might believe that Jesus is the Son of God and have life in his name. So I think that your explanation was excellent and very appropriate.
Let me say one thing about that purpose statement, too. And I didn't mean to imply that gentleman would have had that perspective. That's the only way I've really run across it. Anyway, that purpose statement is written that you might believe. The noun faith isn't in the Gospel of John. Always the verb. And so Jesus gave his life, so you give yours. That's the point. And yeah, these times are hard and all that. Things are changing. Yes, he gave his life, you give yours. There's the point of John.
I thought that was great, Matt. I was going to ask you about the date of John, but going off of what's just been said here, would it be true to say that John's gospel is is the first Christian apologetic? Because what Matthew, Mark, and Luke teach concerning the preexistence of Christ, John makes explicit.
Mm-hmm.
And he has all the I am statements referring to the Tetragrammaton, Jehovah, and our Yahweh, and he has the seven miracles proving the divinity of Jesus. And it seems that John is dealing with incipient Gnosticism and those other things that you mentioned, and he is making explicit and detailed what they have assumed to be true, which is true. Is that a fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think the structure of his book lends itself toward that. Nice use of the word incipient, by the way. Wish I'd have thought of that one. But yes, I would agree with that.
Really appreciate it, Matt. I just wanted to make a comment on what Jonathan brought up about the phrase of Jesus in saying, I am. There are a number of times that he says that he uses there in John 8 as well, when he says, before Abraham was, I am. But that wasn't what he said there in Matthew 14. There in Matthew 14, when he says, it is I, it's just ego. It's just saying, it is I. When he makes that emphatic phrase before, it's always the ego a me, which duplicates I am. He makes a very emphatic statement. So it's the thought is true, but we can't use another verse that doesn't have it to try to prove that point. So very good point, but we just want to make sure that we're using the right spot each time.
Thank you.
I'll reveal my simplistic mind. I think you had, why did John write, supplemental, interpretive, independent, substitute here. I appreciated that. When people ask me that question, though, why did he write that? I just say, because that's what God gave him to write. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, no question. The role of the Holy Spirit, by the way, is emphasized in John, isn't it, in recording the message? more than any other book in the New Testament. So,
well, we're done a little bit early. Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you.
I appreciate that very much. I appreciate, like I said, I appreciate when we talk about the implicit teachings of Jesus. If we throw away the implicit teaching, if we throw away the idea of implicit, we throw away a lot of very important stuff. Thank you very much.